ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Rough night, huh?
You get used to it. We saved you. And now you save others. Who are you?
They did not save your life. They stole it.
She knows.
I order you to terminate.
Major!
They created me.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper.
Oh, we're going deep today.
That we are. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Chad Riley.
Hello, hello.
How's it going, my friend?
So well.
You know what is awesome?
I'm excited.
I'm excited too. You know what I'm excited about? We are not alone.
We are not alone.
Reaching from the great beyond of New York City, we got Miss Val Complex returning. How's it going, Val?
Hey, hey, Sacramento and everyone around the world.
That's
I miss
right.
California.
Yeah, that's right. Val is true Californian.
And California misses you.
Yes, it does. California. And of course, speaking of Californian, we also got Miss Laura on hold as well.
Hello from
great
LA.
Great to have you back, Laura.
Thank you.
We got an exciting show
to
talk
about. And we miss you too.
We do miss you.
And, always.
And you know, we got an exciting show to talk about, as obviously this is a topic of interest for a lot of people lately. And we'll get into that. But like all great anime adaptations, The Filmlosophers is presented by Mingle Media TV and recorded live at VGB Studios. If you haven't taken the invisible plunge yet, it's definitely time to subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom. New episodes debut each Wednesday morning. Cyborgs aren't the only ones who can find us in the technosphere. Like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101 to discuss new developments in Hollywood and share your thoughts on our latest review. Finally, visit vgbstudios.com to access the full Filmlosophers episode library and other amazing podcasts like Video Game Bang and me, Mike Self, and I. Like I said, we got an awesome time to really get into this today, and you know what? I'm stoked.
Me too.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we have this luxurious panel of hosts today because we're talking about actually a pretty controversial film that's been raising a lot of questions and comments. And, of course, that is Ghost in the Shell. So, in the near future, Major is the first of her kind, a human who is cyber-enhanced to be a perfect soldier devoted to stopping the world's most dangerous criminals. When terrorism reaches a new level that includes the ability to hack into people's minds and control them, Major is uniquely qualified to stop them. As she prepares to face a new enemy, Major discovers that her life was stolen instead of saved. Now she will stop at nothing to recover her past while punishing those who did this to her. So, this is a recent film that just debuted this past weekend, actually, and is directed by Rupert Sanders and stars Scarlett Johansson, Pilou Asbake, we're really stretching with that one. Takeshi,
your guess is as good as mine, unfortunately.
Takeshi Kitano, Chin Han, and Juliette Binoche. The great thing about the panel that we have here is we actually have diehard anime fans here
Which
with us
I'm
today.
I'm exceptionally grateful for because I am not a diehard anime fan, and in fact, went into this movie-going experience largely ignorant of the storyline, the any of the history of the other iterations of this franchise, or any of it. So I went in with very fresh eyes and had a certain experience, but I'm really excited that we've got these two women on our panel discussion today who actually really deeply know the source material.
And that is who we're talking about today in terms of Val. Val is a huge anime writer. She was writing anime for a good while, in fact. Who were you writing anime reviews for?
Okay, well, my site is coming back. Anime Complexant is coming back. That was my website, and I'm working on it. But I was writing anime. I've written about it for The Nerdist. For Geek and Sundry, for IGN, Black Girl Nerds, and I write about anime all over the place.
It's true.
Seems like.
No, it's very true. And Laura is also a diehard anime fan, as she has a deep-rooted love growing up watching a lot of these films and shows.
Oh, yeah. I grew up watching them. And I was I used to have all the manga, and then I moved out, but I still have them somewhere in my parents' house. But I just grew up with it. I went to anime conventions. Never wrote anime stuff. I recently started writing maybe like 10 years ago. So, but I want to get back into it. But we'll see.
And what's really awesome is you guys don't know, but I have Laura on my personal Facebook account as a friend, and so every now and then she'll pop up with a drawing that she does of, it's like the life of Laura, and it's so funny because you see these little drawings that she does. I'm like, this woman could be an artist or a cartoonist at least. She's the next Calvin and Hobbes.
Hey, thank you. The sound of that. It's a favorite.
But going back to this movie that we're talking about, so the film is loosely adapted from the anime film of the same name, released in 1995, which was directed by Mamoru Oshii. This film's production was met with controversy over the choice to cast the lead role of Major, a Japanese character in the original source material and previous adaptations, as White, with the role going to Scarlett Johansson. So like I said, we're going to be talking about a film today that's really kind of a hot-button conversation piece for a lot of film geeks and cinephiles out there. So we want to preface, if you're listening to this today, this is our own personal opinion. This is what we feel, and we do feel strongly about it. Each one of us here at the table has a very unique and honestly a very heartfelt position on the film. And so we're going to talk pretty deeply about it, like I said, and like Chad said. So just so you know, if you're listening, this is just how we feel. And if you agree, like I said, drop us a line on our Facebook page or our Twitter page. If you don't agree, blow us up and let us know how badly you disagree with us.
I mean, not literally. Don't literally blow us up.
Don't literally blow us up. But, I mean,
go ahead and air your grievances.
Whatever.
It's fine. We've got thick skin.
So what's funny is that Val has been actually making waves in the entire follow-up to this film's debut. Because Val took advantage. I know she's done several things, mind you, because Val doesn't really think highly of this film. Is that right, Val?
Say that again, I'm sorry.
You don't think highly of the film?
No.
And no. And the
sorry,
thing is,
the answer is just no.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that, well, it's not really funny, it's part of Val sending the word and the message out there. There was to give you an example, there was a marketing campaign that they were doing in terms of using the images from the film, and you use your own little wordplay to post it on the image, and then you can put that on it Twitter or Facebook or Instagram. And Val actually kind of took it to her advantage and started preaching the word on that thing, didn't you?
Sure did. I just took the Maymay generator and just said what I was feeling. I didn't think it would, because at the time, nobody gave a crap what I was tweeting. But sometimes when the right people get a hold of it and they send it out, it's a wrap.
Yeah, I got picked up.
My favorite,
what happened?
My favorite was when you had Rika in the picture and it said I was supposed to be. I was supposed to be Moto. I was like, oh, that's a good one.
I tried, but
This thing, I mean, she may sound like it wasn't a big deal, but this thing reached pretty far and wide. I mean, it got picked up by CNN. It got picked up by, didn't it get picked up by the Times online?
It got picked up by the Times.
By the Times.
What? Yes, which I thought was bizarre. Time?
Yeah.
It got picked up by everything that wasn't nailed down. Teen Vogue. What's another one? Like you said, CNN, Polygon, Huffington Post. Like, everybody just went in on it. I don't know. I was shocked.
I don't know. It seemed to make, honestly, I have to admit, a lot of it made sense to me, knowing, you know, coming from the anime origins and everything in terms of knowing where the source came from and seeing a lot of the backlash. It just, a lot of what you were putting out there seemed really relevant and people were flocking to it. So it was a really good way to get the name out there. But in terms of the film, let's just go ahead and jump right into this. We're going to go ahead and go head first. Laura, what was your first impression going into the film? Even before you actually saw or even entered the theater, what was your first impressions? Like, what were you going into it with?
Before they cast her or after they cast her?
Okay.
Laura's saying, how far back do you want me to recollect?
I'll tell you what, let's go back to the beginning. When you first heard that this project was being done, what were your thoughts?
I was pretty excited. I was thinking, oh, this is gonna be great. It's a well-loved anime. Tons of people are gonna like flock to it because, you know, it's a cult classic. And also I was thinking this is a good opportunity to finally cast some Asians or Asian Americans in this role, because usually they need big names for like unknown movies like Lucy and stuff that doesn't have a cult following. But with cult followings, I was thinking they're finally able to have an Asian character be a lead and not have to worry because there's fans who are going to see it anyway. And so beforehand, I was like, this is going to be great. It's going to show exposure for anime. It's going to show exposure for Asian actors. It's going to show why I love this movie, like the anime, so much. So I was really looking forward to it. And then now my reaction after they casted her. And I love Scarlett Johansson outside of this. I wanted a Black Widow movie. And when I heard she was cast, I was thinking, this is not who I imagined playing her. So I felt really disappointed. And, you know, all the Asian groups and everyone, people of color groups are just protesting against her casting. You know, I just felt like what everyone felt, like I'm losing a part of my childhood because I grew up with it, thinking like, you know, this girl I could play her, I could cosplay her, and tons of little Asian girls could be like, I could be a hero too. And it just kind of took that all away, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I just felt a little bit disappointed. And, you know, my mindset was kind of negative, but I was thinking, okay, I'm just going to see what happens and watch it whenever I get the opportunity. And when they started more casting and more information about it, I just felt really disappointed. And then I was thinking, well, I'm hoping that maybe they'll figure something out and not make it all like in an Asian setting. Maybe they'll... And then the geishas came out, and I'm like, no, okay, back to being bad. But yeah, my impressions were just really horrified and disappointed as a fan and as someone who, as an Asian person as well. Someone who is a fan and also as just a regular person.
Yeah, that's so enlightening to hear, you know, as someone who has heard of the film, the original film and subsequent series before, but never watched it. And honestly, I mean, I anime is not my genre of choice. But it's so interesting to hear that whole, you know, kind of in a way dismantling something from your childhood, you know, that you identify with on a very personal level. And taking it and reconfiguring it into something else. I think that's really interesting because for a lot of the mainstream audience, let's say just in America, let alone the world, you know, there has been this topic of casting Scarlett Johansson in a role that should have been an Asian performer, certainly most likely specifically Japanese. And there's a little bit of a disconnect for some people, you know, like myself. It doesn't have that same kind of, I guess, childhood connection or any, you know, like I'm pretty sure I was in late high school when the original came out. And like I said, not interested in that genre of animation at the time or since. So it's interesting because you can have that disconnected point of view, but for someone who doesn't have a disconnected point of view, it's a really important decision for the producers to have made.
I completely agree. I do think it's one of those things where knowing this type of franchise, because it is a franchise, it's gone on from the film that we're stating, the original film from 1995, to a sequel to a series, and it's continued with the same formula that the original had, keeping with the same characters, keeping with the same mindset, and to take that and conscientiously say, well, I understand what this franchise means to everybody else, but we need to bring in the dollars and cast somebody like that. And essentially, you know, in some cases, break hearts of like Laura was saying, of people who, you know, wanted to see a true adaptation of a film that they grew up with. What do you think, Val?
I have so many feelings. I don't know how to put it. Well, I think a lot of it has to do. To first start off with the casting of Scarlett Johansson. I think they really thought she was bankable. But I think when you look in the history of career, they made the wrong choice. That's one. Two, it always seems like with these adaptations, nobody ever familiarizes themselves with the source material. Or they try to take a ton of source material and compound it. We're talking about 20 years of source material with the first movie coming out in 1995 and the last movie rounding things out, which is sort of like a prequel, in 2015. Mm-hmm. And them trying to compound all of that into an hour and 45 minutes. Like, that was a bad call on their part. And then to sort of, you know, do the scenes, some of the scenes almost shot for shot. Mm-hmm. But they don't really capture the essence. And that's the thing about Ghost in the Shell that I think failed, is that it's not wholly revolutionary at this point. Like, you know, The Matrix came out at a great time in cinema where we needed that extra push. We needed something original. And The Matrix took ideas from the original Ghost in the Shell and made it something that was their own. They made their own mythology and their own culture. And it has copied the narrative so many times over. Resident Evil has done it. The Resident Evil franchise has done it. We had the Eon Flux failure that did it. So many other films. There's a little bit of it in Minority Report. So many other films have done it already that it just doesn't feel like anything spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel.
It doesn't feel unique. It doesn't feel fresh. It doesn't
feel. It doesn't feel new either.
It doesn't feel. There's nothing interested about it. Sure, the visuals are cool. You know, the cinematography is decent. But there's nothing new. I mean, there's nothing new there.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I wish they would have taken it different direction and given us something a little bit more action based, like Standalone Complex, where it's they've already, you know, they examine a lot of to do with identity and things like that, but it's ultimately a detective show.
Mm-hmm.
It's ultimately like Law and Order.
Yeah.
I think of Law and Order like a technology crimes unit.
Oh yeah.
And something, that's pretty much
like
what they are.
Report, like you're saying, like a high-tech crime unit kind of deal.
Something like that. I wouldn't say Minority Report, but they're pretty much like Homeland Security for, you know, technological terrorism or whatever.
Yeah.
They could have went with that.
Yeah.
But they went too, they tried to go too deep. They went too deep and didn't really say anything. And so I think that ultimately hurt, aside from the whitewashing. It wasn't a good film.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and
It felt like it was mushed together as well. Like, I felt like, oh, there's just so many. Like, it's slow. It was a really slow movie.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, I feel like they weren't. If you're a fan, you're just going to be like, what the heck? Like, there's so many storylines that are just meshed and it didn't make sense.
True.
I did an Easter egg article recently for IGN, and there were so many Easter eggs because there was so much stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and dive into the movie a little bit more, and so go ahead and talk about. We'll talk about Major and Scarlett Johansson being casted a little bit later, but let's kind of jump into the side characters, the ones that we can, you know, remember, because you have several of the characters that weren't even actually brought back into this film. I mean, by the way they looked, they were, you know, similar, but they weren't actually the same titled characters, same named characters. Because you do have Batu, and you're introduced to him. You're introduced to Han, who is supposed to be what's
Togusa?
Togusa, and apparently
Togusa's in, yeah.
And so they he's in there. You have Aramaki, played by Takeshi Kitano. So in terms of these characters, how similar, since you guys are a little bit more expert in this area than I am, or Chad, how similar are they to their anime counterparts?
You know, well, Tunguz is my favorite in the manga, because he's like a family guy,
mm-hmm.
and he's the only human, and I really like that about him, is that he's just chill, and they give him personality. I felt like they didn't really showcase his abilities as a character that I love. I just felt disappointed. Like, I love Chin Han as an actor,
mm-hmm.
But I know that they filmed a lot of scenes with him, but I felt like they cut so much of it.
Yeah.
And that you don't really get to know the character as well. Just, he's just a side character, really. That's... Like, I'm here. Oh, I figured out something. All right, good for you. And then that's it.
Yeah, it's
true. It seems
true.
Like anybody that's not white is a side character. Like Aramaki. I guess Takeshi Kitano was in the role that he was in. I guess that was decent. But then you have like Ishikawa and Bulma, and I don't even know who the female is. I think they just made that up because the Section 9 crew is literally all men except for the Major. You know, they were just diversity props. Like you said, Chin Han probably had more to do. He doesn't look like a Togusa anyway, but I'm sure he had more to do. He got some lines, but we got people that didn't talk at all, that we didn't see talk at all. And I call those diversity props. And my thing is this.
Agree.
If you're going to talk about how diverse your movie is, then make sure it's diverse and that the characters have some nuance to them. Don't just have them standing around. That's not diversity. Being there is not diversity. I feel like that Hollywood uses that to shut us up and to show us pictures like he. And then when we watch the movie, like, those characters are either cut out or whatever.
And did you find it weird? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that Section 9 is like a team. Like, they're like an ensemble. You have the Major, Motoko Kusanagi, and then each play a role in the section. They do their thing, but they all come together. Like, each one of them has lines, and each one of them is important to the team. But the movie just reduces them to foot soldiers, and that's not what they do. Especially like Ishikawa, who, first of all, of course, that's a Japanese character, and they have the actor, I forget his name, but he seems...
Lafaris.
Right. And he seems to be, I guess, you know, he's black or maybe he's mixed or not cool. And, you know, characters like Ishikawa is like the IT guy. You know, he's like the second best person in terms of technology on the team besides the Major, and they reduced him to a foot soldier, and they did that with all the characters, and it sucks. I did like Bato and the guy who played him. That was very similar to the essence of the character, as far as I can recall.
True.
And the eyes, too, so I appreciated that.
Well, yeah, because he was the only one that seemed to have any depth. I don't know, I guess.
No, I actually agree. Bato is one of the few characters that actually had more of a backstory. And I did like, because in the anime, obviously, Bato is already a cybernetically enhanced individual. He already has.
They all are.
Aside from.
That's the thing.
Yeah, aside from Togusa. But in this one, it's like he does have that stance where he's like, well, I'm not really there other than just some cybernetically enhanced, you know, brain things. And then kind of showing him the transition to that. I thought that lent to a little bit more of depth to the character as opposed to just, oh, this is him. Which, mind you, it serves the story just as well for the original, but in this one, giving it a little bit more context, I'd have to say he was one of my actual palatable characters in the film. What do you think, Chad?
Yeah, I mean, again, the wild card, the complete outside point of view, and I mentioned this off air before we started, but I honestly had a lot of difficulty staying awake. I know, Laura, you mentioned how slow things were, and so there were some definite I feel like, Val, I love what you were saying about the diversity props, because I think also with the whole Easter egg thing, there was a lot that was sort of just these visual touch points that were there but were never really explored within the context of the story. And a lot of it, honestly, for me, was in these one-dimensional characters who literally could have been anybody. The only ones who really had any sincere definition were the Major and, to a smaller extent, maybe this Batu guy, you know, with the feeding the dogs and everything. Like, at least there was something to latch onto. Outside of the role that they play on this team that really seems to just be the two of them. You know, and I guess to a certain extent, some of the other, you know, the masterminds on each side, you got to know a little bit about them, but not really. You know, but it was just kind of this, the whole experience with the characters, with the visuals, I was really, and I know that diehards are going to probably skewer me for this, but all the transitions using the city imagery and the giant holograms on the skyscrapers, I mean, if you were to cut that out of the film, you'd probably lose 8 to 10 minutes of screen time on just transitioning. Here's what the city looks like from this angle. Here's what it looks like from that angle. Here's what it looks like in the day. Here's what it looks like at night. Here's what it looks like at night when it's raining. You know, like, and I think there was such a focus on, and maybe there are a lot of Easter eggs in those, you know, building holograms or whatever was going on, but there was such a focus on kind of putting these little nuggets everywhere that there was no substance to the overall flow of the story. Again, I approach things a lot from a story standpoint.
That's why we have you on the show, Chad.
That's what I'm doing here. I always try to, like, look at the film and imagine, what did that look like on a piece of paper? Like, what did the words on the paper say that ultimately through the creative process led to this? And walking out of the theater, I was thinking, you know, for all that I read about how, you know, philosophically incisive the original content material or source material was and is, and all the existentialism and everything, like, I was sitting there thinking in the car, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if the screenplay for this movie was like 35 pages long. there's not a lot of dialogue. There's not necessarily a lot of action that you would write out and script out, probably because they're taking references from various, you know, different anime properties within the franchise. But, you know, it felt, the characters, the story, all of it felt very thin to me.
It just really, yeah. I think if the film was like on a $40 million budget and not an inflated budget of $110 million, and they did something, you know, gritty, grungy, and sort of lo-fi, kind of like the original,
It
would have been a little bit better, more money to focus on the characters and sort of focus on creating a story than giving us, like you said, like these slow motion moments, like that moment where she fought the guy in the water.
Yeah.
If you watch the anime, that scene is not that long.
Mm-mm.
It's very quick. But they just dragged it out with the slow-mo moments. And it was like, okay, we see it. We see him spinning around. We see this. We know that the string is pulling him and turning around. Like, we know. Like, I don't know. Ugh. Yeah.
I feel like they were trying to, like, instead of having good dialogue, they were just trying to, let's see, look how awesome our action scenes are. Look, like the FX, she's invisible fighting him. And and then the scenery, I feel like they wanted people to be amazed with the visual effects rather than the dialogue. But everything is so pretty. Ignore the storyline. Yeah. But look, it's so cool. I think they were hoping for the mindless action instead of like a story with substance.
True, mm-hmm. And I completely agree, because here's the problem. The entire scenery of this film looks nothing like the anime. The anime, like Val was saying, the anime has a grit to it. There's almost like a noir vibe to the overall film, where, you know, the major's constantly walking around with this, you know, with this coat, and the way the music interludes with the scenes, and not so much as like everything's focused on the outside perspective, but what the scene is trying to tell you, in how it transitions, and just the way you see the major looking at things, and the way the conversation between the major and Batu happen, and just the entire anime is like an anime film noir, honestly, and it's beautiful. This was like, look at this, look at that, look at over here, look what we did here, look what we did there. It was almost like we were watching Emil Hirsch's Speed Racer all over again, that world where everything's, you know, holograms, and this is ridiculously looked like that, and there's a goldfish flying through this and there, and, you know, we got Harrison Ford flying over here with Edward James Olmos, and, you know, it's just, it seemed ridiculous, like they wanted to throw everything and the kitchen sink into this film to get people to see, yeah, we're really kind of beefing it up. We're going to make this look really cool, and people are going to want to see it because of the visuals, and people are interested in how we made it look so cool, and, you know, maybe they'll forget about how the original looks. And I just, for me, that kind of seemed all superfluous.
Which is very interesting for the outside guy, because honestly, there wasn't a feeling of, wow, there's so much here. Because it all felt the same. Like, within the context of the movie, it felt like there was a lot of recycled content within the span of an hour and 45 minutes. And it was, it felt very thin. The coolest thing to me happened very early on with the corrupted geisha robots, where the one kind of went spider-like. Mm-hmm. You know, they have this scene where they take hostages. And, like, that looked truly menacing, more than anything that happened later in the film.
Yeah.
Fairly unique, just visually speaking, like a unique moment. But it was over too soon, and there was nothing later on that kind of matched, for me, that really matched that level of intrigue.
And that actually brings us to another point in terms of talking about this film. Diverging from the original story. So, if you're unfamiliar with the original anime is not this, like, self, you know, realization type of thing for Major in terms of, like, trying to figure out who she used to be, where she came from, her parents, or whatnot. There's none of that in the original anime. And a lot of what was in this film is pretty much brand new, which I think was error number one, diverging so far from the source material that it's creating something that, unless this was gold coming out of the gates, it was going to flop. And then secondly, we'll get into secondly, but in terms of the story, secondly, focusing primarily on a storyline that talks about the unique individuality of each person and what's inside of them, like their ghost, their spirit, pretty much promoting individuality when you have a film that's supposed to be a Japanese type of film and you got people like Scarlett Johansson in the lead roles and kind of things like that. So those kind of struck out for me in terms of the storytelling and the way the film kind of diverged from that original story. What do you think, Val?
I think they a lot of shots are like shot for shot from the original, but again, some things are new, some things are from the original, some things are from Standalone Complex, some things are from Solid State Society, and some stuff is from Arise. Like, it's just all over the place. And the reason why, you know, each individual series is its own universe is because, I mean, is each individual story is in its own universe. So to take that out and throw that in a story, it doesn't make sense. Just like, for example, we were talking about before the podcast started, was when you think about it, the Major can't be any older than 17 because she was considered a runaway, mm-hmm. right? Or, I mean, I'm just thinking in terms of American age or whatever, but I'm assuming she was no older than 17. So that would mean that they put a 17-year-old's brain into a body of an adult, or into a body that was semi-adult, which is not the way it happens in the original. The Major is already confident in who she is. She's already been working for Section 9 for some time. And it just kind of, that part kind of freaked me out. In addition to, you know, they're like, oh, she's the first of her kind. No, in the original, everyone is like that.
Yeah,
everybody's like that except for Togusa and a few people within the society who choose to be human. But pretty much everyone in the society is like that. The only difference is the sort of invisibility cloak that they get because they're special ops. That's the only thing that's different. Bato has the eye.
That's part of their equipment. That's not like a feature on her body in the anime. It's part of her equipment.
Right. It's part of the equipment. And even like the eyes of Bato, like he was in the army, like he has a military background and those eyes come from the army because he was an army ranger. You know, that's not something he got in an accident because his eyes got blown out. Like, you know, it's not, I mean, fine. I mean, it's cute for the story, but it's not how it goes.
Yeah. What do you think about
it? I'm not a purist like that. But if you're going to use the material, use it right. Use it properly.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'd have been glad if they just made up something. Just make up something. Or just stick with one thing. All those other details. And Juliette Binoche, I don't know what. They must pay her well because I just, you know, I saw her last movie, Clouds of Sils Maria, and she was fantastic. And then to come sign on to this where she was phoning it in, I don't know. Whatever.
I think we completely agree with you on that one. Laura, what do you think in terms of the story?
It didn't flow. Like, it was not, I felt like it was, I saw shots for shots for each, like, there's different animes, and I was just thinking, I don't know if they, and they were trying to incorporate all these different animes and then try to build their own original story, and it felt really confusing where at some point I'm like, wait, are they trying to follow this now? Wait, but they have their own story. Wait, but are they gonna have this? And then it got confusing where I'm just like, because I know the storyline, so if I see aspects of it, I'm like, this doesn't really flow. Mm-hmm. This doesn't make sense. And then Val and I talked earlier about like some scenes were cut, and it was supposed to help a little bit, and it kind of was going to help a little bit, but I just felt like it lost its way because I feel like it was trying to when I was watching it, I felt like it was trying to say, you know what, I'm going to try to make these anime people happy by incorporating some of this stuff, but keep the moviegoers happy by just giving this other storyline and then meshing it. And it just didn't make sense. It felt like I was watching Star Trek Into Darkness, where I was trying to impress Trekkies and impress moviegoers, but it just didn't work.
That's so synonymous with a lot of like really bad adaptations of most beloved works, whether if it's from books, comic books, even original films that have been made and then rebooted. You know that there's always that one telltale sign of, you know what, I don't think you did that right, when you got people who are saying, well, you know what, where exactly are you pulling your information from? Because you have this first half, this first third is from this one that's down the road in terms of the storyline, but then you got your second, you know, act, which is from the prequel, and then you got your third act, which is from the reboot that happened after the first reboot. And kind of it's interesting how that tends to be synonymous with really bad reboots for most people. And it's usually a telltale sign, like I said, of sloppy story writing, sloppy, you know, storytelling.
You know, it's interesting to me too. I've been thinking about this for the past, I don't know, 20 minutes, ever since you both re-educated me and said, hey, actually these stories are usually about a team. Because I grew up huge X-Men aficionado, right? The comics, the cartoon, eventually the movies. And I've been thinking this whole time about how, you know, this is essentially the wrong way to do a team film. Obviously, you have a focus character, right? So the first X-Men film, Bryan Singer, 2000, right? Wolverine was the focus character. But there was still room for the other characters. You know, were they as cool as they were after, you know, 50 years of publishing history and multiple other properties? No, because you only have 2 hours to get to make that introduction and do that. But at least there was sort of a tapestry approach where different characters held the weight in different sections of the story. Here, you know, it's sort of like I didn't get that team mentality at all. And it just overall, it leaves it lacking, because what they've done with that central character, with the Major, is not really enough. In this telling, it's not really enough to carry the whole film. I left the theater thinking, wow, I wonder why they spent that much money on it. Because it's not really, again, I don't think they had all that much on paper. It had to have all been just hoping that you'd appeal to the fans. I mean, I guess the money play obviously was casting Scarlett Johansson to try to get a mass audience, a Western audience in particular, to go to the theater for it in the first place if they weren't already fans or familiar with source material. But then, I don't know, it sounds like they also butchered the source material. So, I don't know, it sounds like a lose-lose to me.
Yeah. And speaking of Scarlett Johansson, let's just go ahead and jump into the elephant in the room, shall we, and really kind of talk about what's on everybody's tongue, and that's the controversial casting or whitewashing, if you will, issue with the film. So, honestly, there are a number of Asian actresses that could have taken this role, if I'm correct, right, Laura? Because I know that's something that you really have a big passion for. Knowing who could have played what, because if you don't know, Laura is a very big avid writer in this area, and this was one of those things that I've heard her passionately talk about in terms of who could have played what and so forth. So this has been an ongoing conversation ever since this project was talked about. What is the most controversial thing about the casting of Scarlett Johansson, Laura?
I was essentially whitewashing, and so when they cast her, I was thinking, oh, they totally whitewashed her, and then they said, we're going to make her the Major, and Scarlett Johansson said, I'm not taking a role that was supposed to be for an Asian person. And then when you watch the movie, surprise, surprise, yeah, she was. It just blew my mind when they revealed that. I thought for a second that they were doing that as revenge against the people against it, because it just they outwardly lied about it, and you know what bothers me the most is that, you know, they said that, oh, she's not, you know, we're not going to whitewash, the major is a cyborg. She's we're not making her a Japanese character. But yet, when you look around the aspects around her, it's set in Japan. Everyone around her is Japanese. You know, even the boss, like Aramaki, is Japanese and speaks to her in Japanese, and she understands it. And then the big reveal is that she is Moto. And so I was just like, and she had a mother, and her, and just there's so many cultural aspects that I just felt insulted.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, Motoko, like she played a Japanese person inside of a white body. Like, that's just, there's so many cultural ramifications for that, for, and that Asians are dealing with anyway. So it just bothered me so much to have Scarlett Johansson outwardly say, "Oh, you know, I'm not playing a Japanese person," and then in the end, internally, there's a Japanese person inside of her. So essentially, she is whitewashing this role. Mm-hmm. This whole movie is based in Japan, so they want to use the Japanese aspects and the Japanese lifestyle, but they don't want to use a Japanese person.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's pretty much the controversy in a nutshell. For people who are unaware, or, I mean, honestly, you'd have to be living under a rock to not be aware of what's been going on with this film. But here's the thing. And I'm going to play devil's advocate a bit, so nobody kill me, please. But let's just say people who went to go see this movie, and this is open discussion for whoever has an answer. What if someone were to say, well, you know what? I saw the movie, and you know what? The shell was white, but she just has the spirit of someone who's Asian, but that's not really her. That's actually just a robotic outer shell, so to speak, a robotic outside facade. What would you say to someone like that?
Robot's not a cyborg. They're different. That's what I would say first. Mm. Second, I'd say there are references within the source material that point specifically to her nationality. If anybody needs a reference out there, if you're listening and you sit and you think, wow, the major is white and they draw her to look white, Standalone Complex, episode 11, details of the major's upbringing and how she got to know Hideo Kuze, and they talk about her parents. In Arise, Ghost Tears, Ghost in the Shell, Arise, Ghost Tears, part 2. The major is having a fight with an antagonist, and he says, quote, and I quote, they're talking about the antagonist whose name is Scylla. And the antagonist is like, well, so-and-so was Japanese, just like you. So if you want the truth, you can go right to those references and see for yourself. Mm-hmm. It's in the material. People just, I think it's just a lot of riffraff out there who just need a platform and need to get their bigoted ideas out there that white is right and everything. And that's what makes the casting so problematic, is that this shell is constantly referred to as beautiful evolution. This is what everyone is going to be like. Mm-hmm. And it's like, is Henka Robotics Company short for KKK or something? Like, everybody wants to create this master race of white cyborgs. Is that what this is about? Like, that's the way I kind of took it. And it was really offensive. So, the idea that someone would even look and think that that would be something that people would accept is mind-boggling.
You know,
so if you look at her shell and say, "Oh, white," no, wrong.
That's true, because Japan has a problem with that. Like, white the skin, the white everything, like that's like such a big deal for. For like, it seems like, oh, white is right and everything, and it just makes it wrong to kind of put that story in there, that, you know, even though I'm Japanese inside, I want to be white. And it's just, you're dismissing a whole race and a whole ethnicity and their generations and who they are. And, you know, I get people want to do adaptations, and that's cool, I get it. But, you know, in the end, you made her, you brought back that she is Japanese, and the whole aspect of her surroundings are Japanese. Like the ancient one. You know what? If you wanted to make her Celtic, you should have made it in Ireland. Then, you know, then you get away from that controversy. If you wanted the major, then you know what? You should have based, if you wanted to do an adaptation that strays away from the Japanese culture and the Japanese manga and journey that they went through, then have it somewhere else. But it's still using Japanese culture, Japanese aspects, you know, and also they made her Japanese still.
Well, I think it also ties into what we were talking earlier about, you know, not there just isn't a lot of substance in this version of the story, because it wouldn't necessarily be all that comfortable, but there would be a way to address some of those race oriented issues head on within the context of this story. I mean, the reality of the character, as you come to learn, is that she was a runaway. The place where she was living was assaulted. She and a bunch of others were captured, and essentially their brains were taken out of their bodies to be put into these cyborg weapon people, you know, hybrid things. You know, if the production team and the creative minds behind this iteration of the story were bold enough to push the envelope, because I think earlier we were talking a lot about how there's nothing really new here. The anime was a source of inspiration for a lot of other films between 1995 and 2017, that they've done the things that kind of distinguished the anime as, you know, new, revolutionary, unique, in different ways, to, you know, various degrees of success or failure. But so then by the time you get to the actual adaptation here in 2017, there's nothing that feels particularly new, refreshing, or revolutionary. If they had, you know, kind of in a way, if they'd had the guts to go head on into the question of identity as it pertains to race and the perception of beauty or power, you know, strength, you know, honor, whatever you might go. I mean, that would have done a lot to enhance, at least for this, you know, again, ignorant outside guy, that would have enhanced the quality of the story for me, that they had the boldness to try to tell a deeper story. The fact that they don't is perhaps the most disappointing feature of the film. You get to the end of it and you're like, well, but the casting decision didn't matter. There was nothing that they did within the story to leverage that, you know, that mechanic of the story. It just was, you know, which is the worst reason to do it.
What do you ladies think?
Man. I don't know how I feel like I had so much to say earlier, and now I'm at a loss for words with the different things that you bring up.
You were on fire right before I hit, all right, we're recording. And right after we hit record, it's like, is Val, you're there. I can hear you.
No, you, because you bring up so many good points and so many things that I hadn't thought of before. Mm-hmm. That I'm like, oh, this just makes it worse.
It really does. I mean, it's like, it's the opposite of the feeling that I had coming out of Zootopia, which obviously completely different type of story. But in that regard, what impressed me the most wasn't the animation, wasn't the vocal talent of the performers. It was the fact that they were bold enough to go somewhere that I had no idea. I mean, we saw it opening weekend. Mm-hmm. There weren't a lot of reviews, you know, out and about. I had no idea that it had the context, you know, the culturally relevant context points of the plot, mm-hmm, that it did. But it took advantage of it.
Yeah, and in this case, this totally sidesteps all the important questions, all the meat of what this story could have had, gives you a bare bones structure of somewhat of a storyline, and hopes to pay it off when the ending comes. And yeah, I just, yeah.
It's just, you know, Well, you know, I think the biggest mistake was giving Scarlett Johansson a $10 million check and saying, lead this movie. Because let me tell you, I don't think she's led anything outside of Lucy, where she's been like the star, the headliner. She was the headliner of Lucy. But Lucy was also $40 million in budget as well, and was an original story. That's why I always said, that's why Lucy, I said in the beginning, Lucy reminded me of Ghost in the Shell, especially with the ending. And I was like, they should have just went ahead.
Somebody heard you and they decided, oh, that'd be great. Let's go and do it. So we should blame Val.
And let's call that one Ghost in the Shell. They should have just went and made Lucy part two and start a franchise for this broad instead of focusing on something that's not going to work. Anime adaptations have a history of not working. They're not going to work. They don't work for a reason. They work in animated form for a reason. They will never work because Hollywood will never figure out how to market them right, market them enough to make American audiences interested. They'll always cast weird or people no one cares about or don't belong in the film. They'll always deviate from the source material, which will piss people off. And they always hire people with the least amount of experience to run this. I think if we had like Denise Villeneuve, or I forgot how to pronounce his name, or maybe Christopher Nolan, or somebody with some experience with telling a story, maybe the film might have had some merit, and we could be like, okay, whitewashing is still bullshit, and we could still be mad, but at least we'd be able to give it props on a level where it's like the movie is good. But we can't even do that because we have the guy who directed Snow White and the Huntsman and slept with Kristen Stewart, and both are bad.
Yeah.
So I just think, you know, there's a checklist, and they always miss the mark on everything.
I love what you're saying, too, because it really, you know, speaking about, Laura was talking earlier about kind of, you know, stepping on the childhood and all of that. Like, I love how you talked about, you know, anime is anime for a reason. It works in that format for a reason, because it really, in a way, and not to trivialize the conversation at all, but it reminds me of things like, you know, live action Scooby-Doo movies or live action Flintstones or live action Smurfs. Mercy. You know, it's just it's one of those like, it works in the format that it was in, but it really, when you translate it into live action, there's something that doesn't translate every time.
And that's true. And so I'm going to pose this question to you guys, because I'm listening to the conversation and I'm thinking, I hear the issues with the casting, but I also hear the issues with the story. So in terms of the biggest failure with this film, would you say it's more of a percentage of the casting of Scarlett Johansson and the whitewashing, or do you think it's in the area of the horrible story writing and or the storytelling and screenwriting of this film? What do you think has more weight in terms of really leaning this off of the tower?
Oh man, that's a difficult question because both were bad.
Yeah, they were both horrible.
Can we differentiate the two? But then again, if you think about it, if they had cast Ringo Kikuchi and changed that narrative, imagine if they just took, you know, her brain out and just made her whatever. Let's say the story was similar. The movie would still be bad. It would still be slow.
Yes.
It would still be boring. It just wouldn't be controversial.
And then if you get a great storyteller who does, you know, wonders with a script, but you still have ScarJo as the lead role in a very known Japanese character, then you know, you if still they have the controversy. Were able,
well, you know, if they were able to, because like I understand how adaptations, like they want to adapt it to, like, you know, I know like Asian, like Japanese studios have adapted like Shakespeare, but they made it into their own Japanese spin to it. If they did that and they brought it into like somewhere else, not Tokyo, and not use that culture, and they made it into an entirely different, like maybe in Germany or in like somewhere else, maybe it would have worked without the controversy, because at least they're adapting it somewhere else, and making it maybe making a different story and not in really Ghost in the Shell, but using aspects of it, kind of like Lucy, like a Lucy too, actually.
Yeah. Val, what do you think?
I feel like.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Laura.
Oh no, I feel like, you know, if they had a person in the writer's room who could help make it like cultural appropriate, then I feel like it would have helped a little bit.
Hmm. What about you, Val?
I just think that they missed out on the opportunity to give a female action star in a semi-original franchise that could be built upon, as opposed to putting her in something that tanks and then probably putting all the blame on her. Which I foresee coming. And I don't like Scarlett Johansson. She's a liar and a whole bunch of other things. But what I don't want to hear and what I will not allow is for them to place all the responsibility of the failure onto her and onto female-led film, because we already know that that's a lie. Female-led films are successful. Lucy was successful, and Lucy is bad. Lucy is an awful movie. But I think they missed an opportunity to give her something of her own instead of trying to bank on something that was already well-known and then putting her in the middle of it and having her, you know, be in the middle of the fallout, which I think is kind of unfair.
Because,
I mean, she takes some of the responsibility because she didn't have to take it. I'm sure she got the script in the mail and read it and was like, well, okay. And then she got that check. I was like, all right, I'm down. $10 million? Yes.
So,
you know, I'm sure she's going to take her check and run, but the studio might be out large amounts of money.
I also think
it's the writers as well, because they, like, the screenplay, there was three white guys who, you know, just wrote the story without consult. They should have added other people who were involved, maybe involved with the anime or the TV series, which when they subtitled it and changed it to fit the US here, they should have gotten some of those people and just talked to those people and kind of figure out, you know, how to just to make the whole storyline flow without grabbing bits and pieces of it. And I mean, that's their fault too.
It is. And I just want to say really quick, like, okay, so, you know, like Laura was saying, you know, go and talk to the people that are involved with the creators and stuff. I know Mamoru Oshii and the Japanese publishers of the manga have said that they approve of Scarlett Johansson, this and that. First of all, I'm sure they were paid a hefty sum to say it. I would probably say it too. Because when it comes to capitalism, people want to make money. So they're going to sell out. Who knows? Who cares? Whatever. But the fact that people use that as an excuse to say, oh, well, you know, the creators liked it. Or what else have I heard? You know, the Japanese aren't saying anything about it. It's just, you know, the Americans. Well, it's a American production, stupid. Of course we're going to say something because it involves American audiences. That is where the majority of your money is coming from. So of course we're going to have a say in how the film is going to go. Yes, international sales mean a lot, but American studios only get a small percentage of that box office success at foreign box offices. So the compare Japanese audiences to American audiences, it makes no sense. Why would they care about an American production? They are a homogenous society filled with Japanese people. It's not like they have a dearth of white people to cast in their films when they need white people in, like, Attack on Titan, when they need German. They turn on the TV every day and they see themselves. We turn on the TV every day in America, we see white folks. So those two have no comparison. So please, people, if you're listening and you've used that argument before, stop. It's not valid. It's a straw man argument and it holds no weight.
Yes, it's the Asians versus Asian Americans issue thing that I keep fighting with people about. It's like, we're not the same thing. Asian Americans were based here, where we're you know, it's a mixed diverse country. And, you know, when we turn on the TV, you know, we're Asian American. We want to see ourselves on television and yeah. stuff that we see every day. And so I read the manga and growing up, so I was thinking, oh, this is great. I have, at least I have something, you know, I could cosplay and just read that is Asian. But then, you know, it's written in English because I can't read Japanese. So I can understand it. And then it was also dubbed in English. So it's like, wow, okay, I could... I could be this character. And, you know, growing up, me and my cousins would fight about who gets to be Jubilee, because that's who we had from the X-Men. And then we fought about who gets to be the Yellow Power Ranger, because that's all we had,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's now finally, it's like, we're slowly getting up there where we're like seeing ourselves in American Hollywood, and television and movies
mm-hmm.
that, you know, Ghost in the Shell, it's like, finally, and then it just gets taken away from us. I mean, there's a great YouTube video that someone created of a little girl reading, like, looking through comic books, trying to find someone who looks like her, and then she finds Ghost in the Shell, and then a few years later, the movie adaptation's happening, and they see Scarlett Johansson instead.
Yeah.
So that really hits close to home.
And it's you know what, this conversation, it's such a large conversation and an impactful conversation that, unfortunately, if we had more time, we could dive deeper into it and really just go on beyond what's just at the surface and really get into the meat of all of it.
Yeah, I mean, but it's clearly more than just this one film
project. Yeah, no doubt. But, of course, coming to the conclusion of our review, overall, the film didn't really, as you can obviously tell, if you haven't realized it yet, it didn't really hit any of our standards. So right from the get-go, we're going to go ahead and go with Chad in terms of, does it pass or fail, and how many monocles do you give it?
Yeah, I almost fell asleep four different times, and it was the middle of the day. The sun was shining outside. I had gotten a full night's sleep before, and I still had trouble. I never have that problem. Even if it's late at night and I'm tired, I love movies. I love them. So, yeah, it's a definite fail for me.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of number of monocles,
I guess... You can give it zero if
you want. I'd give it one only because I'm a nice person and I don't like to give something that... literally hundreds of people invested time, effort, talent, and energy into it, right? You've got sound mixers and PAs and... the visual effects teams that each have dozens of people on them. I mean, there are people that really, they worked hard on this product. So I always feel terrible saying I give it 0 out of 5, but I definitely, all of their hard work, still, I was so underwhelmed by the film, I'm only going to give it 1.
What about you, Laura? Does it pass or fail, and how many monocles? And keep in mind, you can give it 0 monocles if you want.
Yeah, you don't have to be like me at all.
You know, it failed. Definitely, if you can't tell. I actually, even though I really like didn't like the story and I don't like the controversy behind it, the artwork was pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it was culturally appropriating geishas, and which is not a thing, which is a thing, but it's not like that aspect. And I mean, it was beautiful. Like, that was pretty. Like, the way they made the cyborgs and the other things, like, it was pretty. So I maybe give it a half.
Cause there you go. Hey, that way, whatever works for you. Like,
break a piece of the monocle and...
There you go. Like, give it a shard from the glass.
Because I don't want to take away from the artistry of it.
Yeah. What about you, Val? Does it pass or fail? Dumb question.
It
and
fails.
How many monocles?
I'm actually going to give it higher than anyone else so far. I'm going to give it 1.5 monocles. Let me tell you why. Weta, when I read the production notes about what Weta, the design team, did on this movie, they worked their butts off.
Mm-hmm.
And they put in so much input into making the film look and feel as much as within the directions they were given.
Mm-hmm.
They worked their butt off. And I think the aesthetic was captured in terms of, you know, some of the stuff was shot for shot, and I was impressed by that. But ultimately, it, you know, it falls flat. It doesn't, it captures the look, but it doesn't capture the essence of Ghost in the Shell. And the, trust me, the look is not why we like the movie, because if that was the case, you know, it's nothing special. True. The anime is nothing special. It's the story that holds up. So I give it a 1.5, but it's still a fail.
I agree. And it's such a valid point that you bring, because for me, obviously it fails for me, but I give it one monocle. And here's why. Because of the fact that this film, the conversation of whitewashing and diversity in cinema and the gender bias of Hollywood is now a commonplace conversation because of these failures of films, because of these instances where this happens. This is no longer the back burner of conversations. This no longer is the conversation to have maybe down the road because it's not as valid. It is happening now. It is occurring now. The reasons are here, plain black and white. And we can actually say that because of these issues, because of these instances, we can now bring those conversations to the forefront. So because of that, I feel that this deserves at least the one monocle for me. But that about wraps up another incredible conversation here on the Film Philosophers. Again, I want to thank Val and Laura for being on the show and just giving us their awesome input. It's so wonderful always having them on and having them bring what they know and what they do to the table. So I want to thank you, ladies, of course. And where can people find you, Val?
You can find me on, like, I guess if you Google me, apparently I'm all over the place. I had somebody Google me, and I'm like, man, you come up a lot. But I'm mainly on Twitter, my Twitter ramblings, at Valerie Complex, all one word, V-A-L-E-R-I-E, Complex, C-O-M-P-L-E-X.
And Laura, where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter. I work with Nerd Reactor and Nerds Color and Legion of Leia and a whole bunch of other sites. But you can find me individually with my ramblings on at L Sirikul, L S I R I K U L, and I'm always on there. So
that's. That's awesome.
Talk to me.
Yes, and if you don't know these ladies, follow them, check out their stuff, check out their works. They're awesome. They have great insight to this conversation. And you know what? This is not the end of this conversation here on the show. We love to bring up this type of topic, and we love to bring this type of diversity to the table because of the fact that it's what makes cinema so great. It's what makes movies. It's what makes film. It's what makes the whole idea of creating motion pictures wonderful. And that's what I feel. And of course, I believe Chad feels the same way. So this won't be the last time we have this conversation.
Not at all. It's important. You know, movies, just like any form of art, movies are a place where we should have an opportunity, every single one of us, to reflect on ourselves, our experiences. Not every person's story gets a movie made out of it.
Exactly.
Obviously, with 7.5 billion people on the planet, that would be a lot of dollars in production time into making that happen. But
yeah.
But it's important for everybody to see a reflection of their life experiences, their joys, their struggles, whatever it is, their fantasies, you know, the escapism, the sci-fi, the horror, whatever it is, you know, you should have something that you can, you know, attach to. And that's part of the function of art in any culture. So, yeah, we'll stay on it for sure.
Sure will. And if you, and just to let you know, we are still doing the Beauty and the Beast giveaway. So if you don't know what that is, check out Lesson 55 as we talk about the film, the recent reboot, Beauty and the Beast. And we're doing the giveaway still with the Funko prize pack. So check that out. But like I said, it's a great conversation. So from all of us here at the Film Philosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
Class dismissed.